Welcome to Kansas City Cannabis, where local roots and city pride thrive. Whether you're new or seasoned to cannabis, our expert bud tenders offer guidance and a welcoming atmosphere at our four KC locations. Experience genuine service and hometown heart. Visit kccannabis.org for more.
All right, we'll get you started with a little football news after I let you know that our need to know is brought to you by our friends at All Weather Decks. You know, they're building in-ground pools now. That's right. Missed the swim season this year. Don't miss it next year. Call the guys at All Weather Decks. Cass and his team ready to come help you out. Call 913-206-1974. Find them online at allweatherdecks.net. They're a 22-time winner of the Angela Super Service Award. Locally owned and operated, that's in 11 years they've won those awards in every possible category. Everything, decks, patio, screened-in porches, roofline extensions over an indoor-outdoor room, fire pits, and, yes, even the indoor pools, or excuse me, the in-ground pools. They probably could do it indoor. I don't know. I mean, I don't know how that'd work, but ask them. I mean, they do everything else. Cass and the guys do great, great work. 913-206-1974. Find them online at allweatherdecks.net. We got to get to Kevin Harlan, so we'll go quick here on our need to know. Let's start with the injuries for the Raiders. They're going out for a big prove-it game. We just talked about with Adam Teicher. They are playing at New England, and they may be without all of their stars. Henry Ruggs, their rookie wideout, the top wideout selected in this year's draft, he is out with a hamstring injury. And then Josh Jacobs is and Darren Waller, their tight end, are both listed as questionable. Jacobs with a hip, Waller with a knee, so both questionable. That's all the weaponry, really, for Derek Carr there. So we'll see what the Raiders can do going up against the Patriots, down a lot of folks. Roster moves for the Kansas City Royals. Ian Kennedy has been reinstated from the IL, and Ryan McBroom has been recalled from the what is it? The ulterior alternative site?
Alternate site, yeah.
Alternate site. Jorge Soler has been placed on the IL with a right oblique strain. Greg Holland placed on the IL also with the right oblique strain. Doesn't that just sound like everybody's getting one more game and here's something you can't really prove they don't have?
Right. We're just done.
Kind of feels that way to me. That's kind of the way it feels to me. Dave Tobe today. I thought some interesting stuff from Dave Tobe, Chiefs associate head coach and special teams coach. How far would they go with Harrison Butker? You know, it started out as a 53-yarder. They get the penalty, 58. They still go with it. Adam Teicher asking Dave Tobe, would he have been comfortable had they picked up another penalty going 5 yards back and kicking it from 63?
That day I would have been comfortable kicking another one because he was so on point that day. He was hitting the ball so well, you know, in pregame, and then at halftime he hit another one, and we just really felt comfortable with him the way he was hitting the ball. And it's kind of like when you're playing golf and you're hitting the driver well, you hit the driver well all day, and he was like that. He was in that mode. So even if there was another penalty, I think we probably, you know, we would have had a discussion, I'm sure. We would have talked about it, and you know, I would have been all for it for sure. As far as his leg strength, you know, he's kind of different than other kickers because he works. I mean, I can't explain how hard this guy works. I mean, he is such a dedicated guy, and he's so, I mean, he comes in here and after our meetings in the morning, he'll spend 2 or 3 hours in here just watching tape. He watches every other kicker that kicked, every kick that happened that week. He studies the field that we're going to be kicking on. He knows the science of the game. You know, he studies it so well, and then he works so hard on the field. His off season this year, he worked so hard. He got so much stronger. It was noticeable right away. As soon as he started kicking, you could see the ball exploding off his leg, and he's hitting the ball pure this year. And we just got to hope it keeps on going like that.
What a weapon! I mean, listen, I don't know how far he can go, but don't you kind of want to, like, a, you know, end of the first half, let's line him up from 80, you know, and see what he can do. I mean, I definitely, you know, he's talked about knocking through 70s, but I think he said he made an 80-yarder. Over the summer, so who knows? I think he's gonna get to 60. I think they'll give him the shot. I think he'll put a 60-yarder up there at some point. 2 58-yard kicks last week, which tied Nick Lowry for the longest field goal in Chiefs history. Lowry did it twice, but not in the same game. Bucker doing it twice in the same. In some ways, that's, you know, You're not supposed to knock through 58-yard field goals. You know, you're supposed to be less than 50% on that. So, like, if you want to say, hey, the Chiefs are lucky to be in that game, that's, you know, that's probably, you know, probably an accurate statement. We'll see. Listen, the other way around, they tried to ice Butker in this game. Dave Tobe talking about that fact, asked about what his philosophy is if he's going to go out and try to ice the opposing team's kicker.
Let them kick the kick, you know, because when they were still able to kick the kick, you call a timeout late and they're able to kick the kick, they get too much information. So if we're going to ice a guy, we're going to ice it before he even lines up to make him think about it a little bit more without getting that information that, you know, that Butker was able to get on that long kick. So that's one thing that we would do different. But other than that, you know, he's when you ice Butker, he's just going to get more and more focused. He's a routine guy. He's going to go back to his routine and do the same thing every time.
I like that. If you're going to, don't let him kick it, right? That's the mistake. He thinks, like, everyone's talking about, oh, he's got to make it three times in a row. He thinks, you know, that's more information that he's got, and that's what you don't want. Don't give the guy more info. You know, I thought that was interesting. Most people would say, like, oh, yeah, he made it. You know, it's like, oh, it came up black on roulette. Well, now it's got to be red this time. Oh, he made it. Well, he's got to miss it next time. Not the philosophy there.
Yeah. He talked about the adjustments he made because of the first two kicks. It was perfect for Harrison Butker on Sunday.
Yeah, so we'll see. We'll see how it works out this week against the Baltimore Ravens, but it is a matchup of what I think now would be regarded as, Justin Tucker has been regarded as the top kicker in football, and now I think Harrison Butker's right there with him. These are the top two field goal kickers. This game may very well come down to the field goal kickers when it's all said and done. We will take a break. We turn our attention to Kevin Harlan, the voice of America, CBS, TNT, Westwood One. He's next, right here. Welcome back here on the program here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Soren Petro with you, and time to talk to the man, the voice of America, CBS, TNT, Westwood One. It is Kevin Harlan. He joins us on our T-Mobile guest line. Kevin, how are you, my friend?
Hello, my friend Soren. I'm doing great. Good to be on with you again on this Friday night.
Yes, it is, and looking forward to a big weekend of football. We've got all the big boys now going, at least most of the big boys. I guess I should, the Big Ten and Pac-12 are going to get going later, but we've got the SEC and real Big 12 games going, so college football seems real. Of course, yep. They've got the Friday tests, which are always the final big hurdle for the college games. But I want to start there with the NFL. How amazing is it that they have had just a handful of positive tests and have been so smooth, it seems, in getting the season going the way the NFL has?
Actually, Soren, more impressive than what the NBA did and what the NBA has done over the last 2.5-3 months has been nothing short of remarkable. But they were in a very confined campus situation, heavily cordoned off, and there was no outside comings and goings. You had a very small, defined area where you could go on the Disney campus in Orlando, and they've had no positives. And they had one breach, Rockets player. But aside from that, it's been very clean. But what the NFL has done has taken it to a completely, completely different level. Triple the number of players, triple the number of staff traveling, coming and going with no campus, no defined area, going home to an undefined situation, whether it was wife or girlfriend or whoever, friends, whatever, roommates, and you never know where they've been. But these players are leaving the facility. They're going home. They're coming back. 50, 60, 70 players, depending if you include the practice squad interaction. It's shocking. I am more amazed at that, I think, almost than anything else. Now, they're tested daily, and they're in front of it, but this has been an incredible framework that has been put together by the NFL at great cost. But the players are safe up through now, this Friday night, and that is just shocking to me.
Are we looking at it the wrong way in the sense that the NFL is, you know, I don't want to I mean, the most controlling, I'd almost say obedient as far as the players go. They're more than any sport, every minute of their day, you know, every day of the week save one is planned for them. and scheduled for them, and that they're kind of used to just a rigorous grind throughout the course of the regular season. And in reality, they're only having to control themselves that one night out that they have that day off. Is the battery maybe in backwards when we're surprised the NFL? I get the massive numbers, right? But maybe they're more trained with the kind of regiment that they go through than any sport.
Well, one thing is true. It is a job. And the NFL has been very clear to the players, we're in a pandemic. This is your livelihood. If you're tested positive, number one, you're out. And number two, I think there are some fines associated with reckless behavior. In other words, you're being basically told you can go home and you can come to the facility and we'll feed you all day. And we'll pay you this great salary, and you can play in the National Football League, and with all great, reward comes some sacrifice. And the sacrifice we're asking is that you're not reckless with your away-from-facility behavior. Clubs, restaurants, unmasked, in big groups. I mean, like all of the stuff we hear all the time. So I think the players feel, listen, it is so hard to get to this level. I am making great money. I have got this unlimited ceiling. I am not going to blow it. Yeah, I mean, I'd love to go out to the club. I'd love to go out with my friends. I'd love to be at this party. I'd love to do this. I'd love to do that. But the ramifications, if you get COVID, is that you are on the shelf and are susceptible to fines and some kind of discipline. So, I mean, it's pretty clear cut what's going on. And I think these players are all very cognizant of what, is at stake. And I think they're feeling, for 16, 17 weeks, I can have enough discipline, considering I put my entire life, all those hours, all that practice, everything that's gone into making me an NFL player. And I'm going to blow it because I'm going to go to some guy's house party, or I'm going to go out to a congested club, or I'm going to put myself in harm's way, knowing that there's a chance without a mask in that situation, I could get COVID. You go, no way, man. I'm not going down that road. I can show some discipline. And you can't play pro football unless you have discipline. And we know the players that have not had personal discipline in the past in any sport are now, doing something else in life, and they're not a pro athlete. So, when I see these baseball players, and initially they were traveling and it was running through the team, one guy would get it, then 10 guys would get it, and then have to cancel games. Clearly, the discipline has not been there for Major League Baseball. I do think they are tightening the screws, especially with the teams that are in playoffs, have some real big things to accomplish in the next handful of weeks, months. And maybe they have really battened down the hatches. But early on, we saw, postponing series. Teams are on the shelf. So I applaud the message the NFL has sent out. I think we need to applaud these young players. These are young guys, and we can all put ourselves in their shoes as just a young man wanting to go out and be with your friends and do all this stuff. And they have shown, I think, so far, incredible discipline. The real test is going to be when you're 0-7 or 2-10, and there's nothing to play for, and you're tired of the practice and tired of the this and tired of the that. You say, forget it. I'm going out. I'm going to go out and yeah. And do that. We'll see how some of the teams that are lacking. But I've read where starting quarterbacks have said, I have no problem, literally going in quarantine here for the next 4 or 5 months if my team is in contention and if, I've got a lot at stake. And I've got so much responsibility, so much personal responsibility. No one is more invested in the team than I am. No one is probably more important than I am. I need to put it on my own plate that I cannot go out and do the things that selfishly I'd like to do for the betterment of the team. So we're seeing some real great examples right now, some personal sacrifice for the greater good and for a team like the Chiefs and these teams that have a chance to really compete and be something at the end of the year.
Yeah, no, it is. It's been really impressive to see, and I tip my cap to the NFL and all the teams and players and coaches on how well they've done because – yeah, there are more important things than football in life, but I'll tell you what, life's better with football, and so we all want to watch. So tip of the cap to them for making this happen and make it go the way they have. And one more just kind of on that, you mentioned fines. Were you stunned calling the Monday night game when you saw Sean Payton not even make an effort to put the mask on? We know five coaches got fined $100,000 each of their teams to make sure that the teams, you know, knew that the league was serious about this. They got fined $250,000 each. So $1.75 million in fines handed out to Vic Fangio, Pete Carroll. God, who was the other one that was at Monday night? And then both John Gruden and Sean Payton getting fine with it. I was amazed sitting there watching. You know, I watched with a friend, socially distanced, right? We were sitting outside and on opposite sides. We got a little TV in the porch, and so we were out there watching the game. And I was like, you know, I can't, like, the NFL has, like, no choice. And I think the word had already come down that they'd fine three coaches from Sunday, and he just didn't even try. I was just amazed at how cavalier he was.
I don't know if because both coaches have come out and said they've had COVID and they're now, you know, better, they've rebounded well, if they feel like, you know, I'm not going to get it, I can't give it to anybody. I mean, if that was their impression, I don't know. Both were clearly, we said during the broadcast, Kurt Warner and I did, they're going to get fined. You're right. We just saw three coaches get fined, Fangio at Denver among them. And, you know, now he's an older guy. He's in his late 60s. So there's a reason why he should probably be wearing it. But the NFL is trying to be a good citizen, and the NFL is just saying, hey, just for just, you know, what we're all trying to do as just people on this earth, as human beings, we're trying to protect everybody else. And that's kind of why you wear it, not necessarily to protect yourself, but if you are carrying and you don't know that you won't, you know, infect somebody else, and the mask is proven, some masks have been proven, as we know, to be better than others. So even those, like, alligator, those gator things they put up, those really are not that good. I mean, they've come out and said that they don't do as good a job as a surgical mask and the N95s and all the other different ones. So,
but they look,
you know,
cooler, Kevin. It's a much cooler. You look like a desperado,
like a bandit
riding in.
Yeah, right. you look like a desperado. Perfect word. I'm going to borrow that. But know that they've got. You know, the feeling, I guess, in their mind, listen, I've had it. I'm fine. I'm not going to give it to anybody, and I'm not going to get it from anybody. But I don't think that's scientifically been proven to be correct. So, anyway, the point is that the league has said it. They've got to do it, and they didn't, and they got caught. All that being said, I on the other side of the coin, I understand these coaches, and you know, it's hard to talk with the mask and be comfortable doing it, but we've all kind of adjusted. It's really, I think, even more difficult when you're in a pressure-packed situation where there's constant conversation. You're constantly raising your voice. You're running up and down. And when you are running, you're a little bit winded and you're breathing in heavier. And so, it's not comfortable. We all get it, you know. But the league has said this is our rule, and we're sticking to rules. It's kind of like that gal they showed this morning, who was at her son's middle school game, football game, and they had asked her repeatedly, please put on a mask if you're going to be out with other people, and she wouldn't do it, and they arrested her. Like, there's this big uproar, and you know, I guess we all have the right to do what we feel. At the same time, science has told us that the mask does help to a large degree. And the bottom line is, it's a rule in the NFL, and rules are rules. Rules are rules, and they've got to abide by that rule. When you fly on a flight, and I just got off a flight, a Delta flight today, you know, here into Indy, and on the flight, they will not let you on that flight unless you're wearing a mask. That's the rule. The rule is the rule, and you can't take it off unless you're having a sip of water or you're having eating a cracker or whatever. But the mask has got to go back on, and they're constant. The flight attendants are wearing it, and they just tell you that's our rule. The rule is the rule, and if you don't want to abide by the rules, that's fine. But then you can't fly. Or in the case of the woman, you can't sit in the stands without a mask. So the rule for the NFL is coaches wear the mask, and they're going to get fined. And they got fined $100,000. That's a lot of money. And the team, I think, was fined $250,000 because they didn't enforce it. So, I mean, you know, it's pretty clear, and they've got to do it.
We're talking with Kevin Harlan here in the program. I am curious your thoughts, what you came away thinking about the Raiders. The Chiefs are going to have to play him twice. They have a come-from-behind win at Carolina. People are like, okay, so they're better than Carolina. But to handle the Saints, to come from down double digits, to go win by double digits, that was a statement. I was talking to Adam Schefter, going into that game on Monday, and I said, listen, is this the prove-it game for the Raiders? And he was kind of noncommittal. He didn't want to go there. I thought it was. I thought it was a game that, listen, I'd have been satisfied that the Raiders are more than they've been had they lost 31-30, in a tough fight. But instead, they not only they took the fight to the Saints. I think we've got a contender, right? I the Chiefs are still a heavy favorite, but they at least are a contender out there in Vegas now, right?
I agree. Yep. I saw Monday with my own eyes, and I saw Baltimore for the day before in Houston. So I've seen these upcoming opponents, and I can tell you the one thing which you don't sometimes see as often in the NFL is you don't see in-game, in-half, significant adjustments. And I thought they wanted to come out. They want to play a certain way, and they want to go downfield. They want to use the speed of it, rugs, and they want to, they want to get downfield. They got a tight end who can run deeper and mid-range to deeper routes, and so they want to push the ball downfield to go deep. And they just weren't able to do that. They're just not maybe at that stage to do it as consistently as they need to be a winner. So after the first quarter, I felt it. It was like a sea change in how they approached their offense, and they decided to go with shorter ball control passing game techniques. They began to run the ball a little bit more. They were using a little bit more of the play clock, and the quarterback was throwing much safer passes, and they were taking advantage of moving the chains, shorter throws, which they've got the personnel to do, and a quarterback who I think is more comfortable in that kind of mode. And they were terrific. They kept it out of Breeze's hands, Kamara's hands, and they were able to do those kinds of things. They had a time of possession that was significantly in favor of them, not New Orleans, and they went on to win. Now, listen, a quarterback like Breeze at this stage of his career is a rep guy. He needs reps. He needs timing. He needs, constant throwing. We know the OTAs were non-existent. We know the training camp was like a mishmash of whatever they could get done in a very short window, small window, short period of time. And he is not up to speed. And even probably the headline here is they didn't have the best receiver in football, Michael Thomas, at his disposal. So younger receivers were put in a more prominent role, and they really weren't on the same page in terms of timing and the kind of positioning that Breeze is used to. So they're a little bit out of whack. I think Breeze is still trying to find his rhythm. They still feel good. I think the Saints will be terrific. I think they'll play much better, for instance, against Green Bay on Sunday night, coming up in a couple days. So I don't cross New Orleans off your list. I still think they're right where they want to be, and they're going to be fine. But the Raiders did show me something in what they did, and there was a lot of emotion in that game, going in a brand-new stadium, even though the crowd wasn't there. They played, I thought, as solid a game, and they're not getting penalized, which is just like eye-opening. Like, they're not getting penalized. Now, that being said about them, I watched Baltimore on Sunday in Houston, and Trent and I did that game. Baltimore is great. They are great on every level. Their quarterback, if Mahomes has a guy that is like him, this is the guy. They got a three-prong running attack. They've got a pass-catching tight end. They have taken advantage of some changes on their offensive line, and they filled in where they had a multiple Pro Bowl right guard with a pretty good replacement. Their defense is strong, if not stronger. I think Baltimore is better this year. We know they just about beat the Chiefs and Arrowhead early last season, and this is going to be a test. This is, to me, the only team, Baltimore, is the only team that probably matches what the Chiefs do from tip to tail, player number one through player number 55. They are that good, that strong. And I don't think they're going to have any fans on Monday night in the stadium in Baltimore yet. I think all teams are creeping back into that world. But Baltimore is good. And make no mistake about it, this quarterback he might be every bit as what Mahomes is. I mean, he's throwing sidearm. He's using a moving pocket. He runs better than than Patrick. Mahomes' arm probably is better, but you know, they start weighing each other off in strengths and weaknesses, and they're equal. The last two MVPs, he is terrific, and that team is dynamite.
Yeah, I'll buy that they're all in on him as a passer when they quit running him 15 times.
Yeah, I think it's more him than them. I think it's more he has such confidence in his God-given ability, and he has it, man. This guy is as shifty as any – I mean, he is Barry Sanders-like shifty. Like I've never seen a guy cut like him, and I think he has maybe internally more faith in that because he can do things other quarterbacks can't because of what he can do physically, that you know, he may see an opening that other quarterbacks say, I'm throwing it away, or there's no way I'm going to be able to slip in there. And he does and can and then moves on. So I think he has such confidence in that. But he threw a lot of his touchdown passes from the pocket last year, and I sense that even more so now, he's even more comfortable with his pocket throwing than last year. And that is going to be an ongoing thing. And while they designed a lot of that at Louisville for him, he is even more into it. And that is going to be an evolving and ascending story for Lamar Jackson. The other thing they've got, which a lot of good quarterbacks like him don't, and we think we're privileged in Kansas City to watch, which we are, is a creative, outside-the-box thinking offensive mind. And we know Reed spends like all hours of the day thinking about ways to get Mahomes the ball and to do it in different ways, different looks. And that's what Greg Roman does as the offensive coordinator for the Ravens. Like, he has been given this blank slate, blank canvas, you know, untold written page to do whatever he wants. And this guy is feeding into it, and he's got a coach that is encouraging it in John Harbaugh. So, like, they've got every box the Chiefs check with those kind of concepts and schemes, they check in Baltimore. Like, it's like uncanny the way these two guys, these two quarterbacks, these two offensive minds have arrived on their current scene and done what they've done. I'm just I saw it like firsthand last week, and I'm just amazed at how much they resemble each other. They do it in different ways because the quarterbacks can do it in different ways, and they don't have quite the speed and the quick twitch that the Chiefs have at some of those skill positions yet in Baltimore. But the quarterback kind of makes up for it because he's kind of the combination of that, and they do have playmakers. And I'm just really impressed with them. This game, this team, these teams are like almost mirror images of each other. They do it a little bit different, but their basic overall philosophy is alike. And I won't think too much of it. Even if they win, I won't think too much of it because I do see them colliding in the AFC Championship.
We're talking to Kevin Harlan here in the program. Kevin, with the Lakers grabbing control 3-1 last night against the Nuggets, I do want to ask you, what is at stake here for LeBron James? What would a fourth championship for a third different franchise mean in his place in history?
Well, it would be almost by itself. He has a chance to become a finals MVP for a third different team, which has never been done. No one has ever won three finals MVPs with three different teams. And I think that if anyone has been on the fence, and I'm included in this group, as to who is the greatest player of all time, the league has never had more athleticism than they do now. They've never had better coaching, and they've never gone through what they're going through right now. So, like, he's done it in every stage, right? He's done it as a young player, from an area where he was born and raised in the Akron-Cleveland area. He's done it with a completely different team with a couple fellow superstars and Chris Bosh and Dwayne Wade in Miami, completely different setting. And he has gone to, at one time, seven or eight consecutive finals, which is shocking. He's knocked off the defending champion when he was back in Cleveland. And now he has gone to a completely separate setting where expectations are off the charts, skyrocketing, and he's got one legitimate superstar with him, and then a cast of role players who are proven and who have won, but are role players, contributors, and to do it out there in Los Angeles with a first-time teammate in Davis and a first-year head coach that they've got, and to do it in the setting they're doing it in, which no player, no champion has ever been crowned in this kind of setting, would be remarkable. And I may have to take back what I've said. The greatest I've individually seen has been Jordan. Different rules, different setting. I get it. Hall of Fame coach, though. But this is, if they go on to win, this will put him in a category that has not even been categorized. Like we don't even have like anything in this category in the history of the game, and that would make him in that stance as to who is the greatest of all time. How you could say it isn't him? The numbers he's putting up at this age have never been done. It is history before our eyes. As weird as this whole thing has been, he's getting it done, and that is spectacular.
We're talking to Kevin Harlan here in the program. Always great to talk to Kevin Harlan, but now it's time for our Final Four, unfortunately. We have to bring our conversation to a close, but our Final Four is brought to you by the Kansas Lottery's Player Loyalty Program. It's called Play On. You can enter to win cash prizes, trips, concert tickets, sporting events, and more. Don't cost nothing. What are you waiting on? Details are available at kslottery.com. Kevin, I will start you with this. You will not call the game between the Chiefs and Ravens, because congratulations, a new addition to the Harlan family. Your daughter has had a baby, and so you're not going to be calling the Monday night game. So congratulations on the new addition
Thank
to
you.
The Harlan family. And I know you'll never pick a game that you call, but you're not calling this one. So who wins, Chiefs or Ravens?
I am going to pick I'm going to pick the Chiefs just because I think that on a big stage, in a big game, which they've been through, and, you know, Baltimore was knocked out, shockingly, by this past year, so they've not played in an AFC championship. They've not played in the Super Bowl. A lot of people have been pointing to this game. Chiefs have a big mark on their back, a target on their back every game. It's the biggest game on everybody's schedule, and they're in dogfights like they were last week in Los Angeles against the Chargers. But I just think that makes them stronger. It makes them more resilient. While I think that Baltimore is a fantastic team and wouldn't be surprised if they win, since I am home and I'm not calling it, and we're celebrating the birth of our second grandchild a couple days early, but celebrating nonetheless, I'll pick the Chiefs, and we'll be watching with Kansas City and enjoying the game. I think it'll be a great game. I really do, but I'll pick the Chiefs. Narrowly, but I'll pick them.
Okay. Do you own a Gator?
No, I the first time I really have been, you know, using the mask, my wife bought a bunch of surgical masks like I'm sure most of the listeners use. But down there in the bubble, they gave us the professional N95 masks, Turner Broadcasting did, and I used that. So kind of got used to it and used to the surgical mask, and after I watched the different things they've shown on TV, where if you cough, it sweeps through, and you're not protected if you inhale. That was enough for me, baby. I'm not using it either. Looks better, but I'm not using it.
But you don't have, like, having lived in Wisconsin, you don't have, like, just one for outdoors?
No, I don't. I'm outdoors,
okay,
and I'm not around anybody, I'm maskless. When someone comes around, whatever it was, always put it back on. But I just find it's pretty convenient with the, like, the little surgical mask, the most widely used, I guess. And, you know, fold it up and put it in my pocket, and I put it around my arm and bring it up like it's an armband and put it up, you know, above my elbow and keep it there, and then I know where it is. Problem is those elastic strings break, and so I don't know. I don't have a Gator.
Okay. Yeah, I always use it when I'm doing the walk in the winter.
Sure. I get it. Absolutely. Yeah. I get it.
Okay, two important questions. Paper or plastic?
We're paper. I've seen too much of this plastic stuff, and the plastic is easier, of course, because it wraps and it ties, and it's easy, but I'm going, I like the plastic straw, but I know that's not good, and you see it up turtle noses. That's not a good look. So it's not a good optic. So I'm going paper.
All right. And finally, when you fly, window or aisle?
Always window. Always, 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 always window. Oh, did before the pandemic. Do it now. I can turn. And I always sit on the right side. And I sit on the right side because I'm right-handed, and when I'm doing, adding to my boards and doing my notes and watching tape or whatever, I can conceal a little bit, and I've got to work on these planes, because when I'm home, and I try not to work, but when I'm on the planes, I've got to work, and invariably, I feel the most guilty about this of anything I do, I prefer not to visit because I've got to get work done, and everybody wants to know, what are you doing? What's that? And I appreciate it. I do. I so appreciate it. And I try to be as pleasant in the beginning, but after a while, I need I can kind of curl around. I can use my back as some of a shield, and I can lean against the window, and I can kind of crouch in and get my notes done. But I try to do it and be as polite and respectful of my fellow passengers as possible. But I just find that I can conceal what I do much easier if I'm against a window. So I always take the window.
So the moral of the story, leave Kevin alone on the plane.
No, and see, I hate
give
I,
him
I
the why, window.
I try to be as friendly as I can, but what has really helped me here, I will leave you with this. What has really helped me, which is the biggest turnoff for whoever may ask, is, hey, what are you doing? It looks like you're big into football. I go, yeah, my fantasy football. Door shut. It's locked. They don't ask one more question the rest of the flight. So if I feel like I've got to, explain, I'll say, just fantasy football stuff. And they never ask another question.
Nice.
So I hate to lie, but I do in that particular case, because I've got that is my work time, and I've got to get my work done on those flights. That's a pretty important segment of time for me.
Kevin Harlan, the king of fantasy football.
I feel
football.
Bad. I'm so sorry. I'm not mean. I'm not that. But I do that.
I love it. Kevin, great stuff as always. Congratulations again on the new edition. Please pass along our congrats to the whole family. And have a great call on Sunday. Enjoy your Monday off, and we'll talk to you next week.
My privilege to be on with you every Friday. Siren, thanks so much. Take care. You have a great weekend yourself.
But first, a good sense into the hour answer. Since 1969, how many managers have won 100 games in their first MLB season? The answer is 5. Sparky Anderson, Dick Houser, Alex Cora, Aaron Boone, and Rocco Baldelli, who's 39 today.
Wow, very good. Good Sense app. I got it right here in my hand. Click. I can order what we had last time in about 3 different clicks. Get it downloaded on your phone. Of course, GoodSenseSubs.com as well. Pick the time. You can roll in. They'll even deliver it. It's at Good Sense. Listen, we're just talking about LeBron James there a little bit ago with Kevin Harlan. I would ask this. Like, whichever side you sit on the Jordan or LeBron, it's just a fun debate. But if you have LeBron second, what would it take? What would he have to do to pass first, right? This is one of the things we talk about all the time here in the program, trying to be proactive. If you sit there and it's just Jordan, 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 you're just a fanboy for Jordan, right? And that's fine. You can be that. But if you actually want to have a discussion, you have to have set parameters of what it is LeBron James has to do. You just heard Kevin Harlan there, who's seen more basketball than all of us, right? Knows more about basketball than all of us. Talk about how if he gets his fourth championship for his third different team, that may be it. That may be what sets it over the top. Okay, if that's not it, what is it? Is it just 7 championships? He's got way more finals appearances. Figure out what it is, set that mark, and let's see if he can get to it as opposed to just cheering against the guy.